Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Time to chat to my first guest this morning. He is Gideon Daniel Joubert. He is the founder and editor of Paratus and a board member of Gun Owners South Africa. We're going to have a chat about the gun laws in Australia with an emphasis on how accessible are guns in Australia. So Gideon, thanks for being with me on Hi FM this morning.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to you and the listeners. It's a very important topic, I think.
Very important topic that has become so much more important following the Chanukah massacre in Bondi. So, yeah, really, thank you for the chat. So, can you outline for me Australia's current gun laws and perhaps also how they compare globally?
With pleasure. So, Australia's gun laws have never been permissive, at least not for the majority of the 20th century. They significantly changed in 1996 with what was called the New Firearms Agreement or National Firearms Agreement, the NFA. That was a result of the Port Arthur massacre in Tasmania, which was at that point Australia's deadliest mass shooting. It was also a massive outlier. And it essentially restricted Australians from, prohibited them from owning anything resembling a semi-automatic rifle, severely curtailed their access to handguns, long guns like rifles and shotguns that had to be manual action, put strict limits, numerical limits on what they could own. I think it was 6 firearms in total. And in general, the creation of, or rather the effect of the NFA was proclaimed to be the reason why Australia has had relatively few firearm homicides since 1996 and few mass shootings. Not zero, just fewer. The reality, obviously, is that Australia never really had a very high homicide rate at all, even prior to 1996, and firearm homicides were only about 20 to 30% of those in total. And there was a long-run decline that started in the early 70s, late 60s, so that by the time the NFA came in 1996, that decline just carried on down because Australia really isn't a very violent society. And things like the atrocious massacre we saw on Sunday are rare, but terrorist attacks are not unheard of. I think no one really remembers the Lindt Cafe siege from 2014, where there were fewer deaths, but it was, again, an Islamic extremist that took people hostage at a Lindt chocolate cafe in Sydney. So it does unfortunately happen in Oz. And that just seems to be a thing at the moment.
Gideon, it's interesting you refer to that Port Arthur massacre. I lived in Oz for a couple of years. I remember they always cited that example as a very big success story. They said, after that massacre, they banned guns, and since then, there has not been a single mass shooting event in Tasmania. I hear what you're saying about Australia not being a violent society, but what is your response to a comment like that?
Well, the interesting thing is they've had several mass shootings in Oz since the NFA, and ironically, about less than a month ago, there was a gang member that drove up to, I think it was 2 houses in Melbourne at about 1 a.m. And there's video footage of him, and it was on all the Australian news channels, shooting at these houses with a fully automatic AK-47 rifle, which is obviously a prohibited firearm in Australia. So there seems to be a bit of an unrealistic relationship between Australian perception on the efficacy of its firearm laws versus what happens in reality. The thing that I found very interesting, and not in a good way, about the actual events on Sunday at Bondi Beach is you had these two individuals that were shooting at innocent people for the better part of 30 minutes, which was about a 3-minute walk from the nearest police station, as far as I could tell. And there's a lot of video footage of it, and everyone could film it, but there was not a single person that was empowered to actually intervene from a civilian side, because obviously they were entirely disempowered with owning the necessary tools to do so or even defend themselves. And apparently, as far I have it on good authority, that the Australians do allow armed security to look after religious gatherings because they have acknowledged and identified them as being at risk. But because the gathering at Bondi Beach was in a public space, that did not apply. It only apply the on private protection only applies to actual places of worship, not in the public space. So there is a definite acknowledgement from their side that there is a higher risk. But even though there is a higher risk, you're still not allowed to protect religious gatherings outside of that place of worship, which also does not make sense to me.
So much to unpack with what you've just mentioned here. I'm sure we will all be watching commissions of inquiries as to why the police took so long, why they had 20 minutes, why there were only two police officers there in the first place. So many failures compounded by further failures. I guess my question is, with regard to my mind, one of the biggest failures is the guy, the shooter, was a licensed firearm holder, was he not?
So he was. And
what is the process to be licensed in Australia? Yeah.
So the process, the Australian process is extremely strict. There's, as far as I can tell, there is a background check, character witness statements. There's a bit of a police investigation into who you are. It is a large paperwork exercise. And obviously, the authorities retain extensive power to refuse you not only a license to own, but the capacity to own in general. What I found interesting about the individuals in question is apparently they were on some sort of watch list, which astounds me that in spite of all these sophisticated processes in place, that somehow these individuals not only got through the process once, but several times, and this was never flagged or picked up, which that would definitely require some form of serious commission of inquiry. The other thing is I'd like to contrast the Australian response quickly. If you look at what Israel did in the wake of the 7 October attacks pertaining hardening their civilian population, encouraging resilience amongst private members of the public, and then the effects of that hardening and resilience, where armed civilians actually, on at least two or three occasions that I'm aware of in the press, actively intervened to stop terrorist attacks within Israel. And you contrast that with the Australian authorities' reaction to it, which is to actually further attempt to disempower their civilian population. It is astounding to see it happen in real time. And it's
How do you account for that difference in a? How can two societies facing the same threat have such diametrically different responses to it?
I'm going to risk an opinion here on it. And I think the difference is in the societal mindset and the society's opinion with its own state. I think Israel and Israelis, being a Jewish state, there is a strong sense of ownership and identity over those governing processes, and that Israel has always been renowned to be resilient, self-reliant, and understanding that it has to be resilient and self-reliant for its survival. So there's an understanding that you have a role to play. Whereas my view regarding what I'm seeing from Australia is it's a very much an Anglosphere nanny state, where personal responsibility is increasingly being deferred to a central state authority that is not capable of actually providing the necessary protection or interventions, and that the reaction to the failure of the state is to demand more of the same thing that led to the failure in the first place. It would be very interesting for someone to psychologically unpack that for me, who is professional and can do it with a bit more finesse.
Gideon, I guess a final question, because we've got a minute left. If you're advising policymakers in Australia, what balance would you recommend between public safety and individual rights when it comes to firearms?
Well, I think the first thing is for them to rationalize their firearm ownership policy, which is far stricter than any European country, and that they need to take stock of realities and what threats actually face citizens there. And then I think more important than even that is there needs to be a proper investigation as to how do you let people with links to terror organizations that are culturally incompatible with your society, how do you give them a free entry into your society, let them access firearms in the first place, and then perpetrate atrocities like the one on Sunday? There is a huge amount of soul searching and investigation that needs to happen there. And there needs to be serious accountability for that. I'm not holding my breath that there's going to be, but that is what needs to happen.
Gideon Daniel Joubert, founder and editor of Paratus and board member of Gun Owners South Africa, thank you for your valuable input this morning.
Thank you as well. Take care.